How are you getting through this time? I assume it's kind of the same as everybody.
We're the same as everybody. We're isolated, and that's about it. Just our own time. I'm actually up where I'd normally be. I spend 6 months north and 6 months in the city. So I started it early in the north. So that's where I am. More space than being isolated.
All right. Well, you're an influencer here, Wendell. So before Ziggy jumps in, is there a Netflix recommendation you've got? What is Wendell Clark watching to kill time?
No, not TV. I'm not 24/7 on TV like the rest of the family. I'm outside most of the time. I'm getting ready. You have to prepare to get ready. So I've been sitting on the dock making sure I'm really ready and know how to do it come July.
So we've been reliving, pardon me, the 93 playoffs and the run the team made. I guess we'll start off with Detroit. When you guys were in that series, did you kind of, after the first two games, was it kind of like, all right, we have nothing to lose at this point and play like that? I can remember the 2004 Red Sox were down, 3-0 the Yankees. And it was almost like, you want to know what? We're down a couple. We're probably not going to come back. This is all going to be over?
No, I don't think we ever thought that. It's funny, that whole series. The three games we lost badly. And I think the four games we won were all one-goal games or almost overtimes in all of them. So it was a weird series that way. Yeah, but the first two games, they beat us badly in there. And I remember starting the series. Before the series started, you go through all the coaches, player meetings, and Bernsey said, if there's one thing that happens, you are not to have a fight in the series, and you are not fighting Probert. So after the first two games, and we lost badly, and I didn't have any fights or change the game or anything, everybody was all over me. If you looked at the media, they didn't try to change the game or didn't do this, and it was basically all part of Bernsey's game plan not to get involved. And then we come back and win the next two close ones at home, and then go into Detroit and win, then come back home in game six and lose badly again, and went into game seven and snuck that one out with Borchesky's goal.
Well, Wendell, those days were the very early days of this very radio station in an all sports format. And we all remember Storm and Norman Rumack, and he was on late night. He was a late night vampire. And this city and the fans, you're right, they were all over you. And Storm and Norman, I recall this to this day, was your great defender on this radio station at that time. And it led to some great debate. I would imagine you're holed up trying to stay focused on the next game, on the series at hand. But clearly, based on your comments, you were also aware of some of what was being said. How engaged, if at all, were you in that at the time? Or were you having friends call? Wouldn't have been any texts. Were you having people inform you of what was being said and what was being written?
We know full well. Everybody follows everything. And, if the Leafs are in the playoffs, what the media scrums are like, they're no different now than they were then. So there have been a media scrum after every game, after every practice, after everything going on, asking and stating questions. So that was all part of it. That's all part of playing the game in Toronto. We had the coach had a game plan. Come playoff time, nobody's tipping their hand to what the game plan is. You don't talk about injuries. You don't talk about what goes on. And as a player and one of the leaders on the team, you just suck it up. And here's the game plan, and let's play it out. And come the end of game seven, the tides have all turned, and then there was all good comments again.
So the edict not to fight Probert or not to fight anybody in the series, was that Detroit specific? Because obviously later on, and apologies for gaps in my memory if anything went on with the Blues, but I recall you very clearly, we all do, jumping in on Marty McSorley after he had laid a hit, an open ice hit on Doug Gilmore in the, I guess it would have still been the Campbell Conference as opposed to the Western Conference, and the Campbell Conference final. So was that a Detroit-specific edict?
Yeah, because when it happened, one of the comments was, well, I never got told I couldn't fight Marty. So, and basically that was, by the time we got, St. Louis was a pretty physical, so all the series that we played were pretty physical, and they all went to the seven games and stuff. So, but that game one there, I guess, against LA, Dougie was, the best player in the league that year and the best player in the playoffs. And Marty come across and got Dougie at the stage of the game when we were going to win anyway. I don't know if it was 5-2 or what the score was at that stage. And Marty was probably just setting a tone for his team and everything else that was going on. We're not out of this type thing. That's why he would have stepped up and did that. And so then that really raised the temperature of that whole series. It made it for a fun series. I was the one that made the wrong mistake. I said he went and hit Dougie. I should have skated over the bench and punched Wayne.
Yeah.
He was the guy that ended it for us. So maybe I'd have been better off going over the bench with Wayne.
Yeah, not let him play that game seven. Man, was that a performance.
Something that sticks out for me, I mean, in 93, something you don't see it anymore is, what is it, 21 games in 40 days, did you guys?
42.
42?
Was that what it was? Yeah.
So, like, that. How did that, what was your schedule like? Were you guys even practicing at that point?
We were, like, today, I laugh, just watching my son play coming up through the American League. I said, the kids today, or the players today, they don't practice at all. We were pretty much practicing every day. And then in the first round, second round, pretty much every day, and morning skates.
Wow.
And then going into game seven in Detroit, it was an optional morning skate, and I didn't do it. Then Burns, you said, why weren't you out there? And I said, you said you'd just show up for the game. Didn't matter if I came to practice. And so right up to game seven of that series, it was an optional. A lot of the games in St. Louis were probably mandatory morning skates. And then come the L.A. one, it was a little more optional because now you're into the third round and we're going east-west. Such a lot of travel by the time that series came.
Yeah, I just remember because it really stood out looking at Doug Gilmore through that playoff run. Wendell, did you guys just marvel at it? Like, he was playing at such a high level that obviously he was able to keep himself in condition to keep going. And I don't want to, I guess it's not fair to single out Doug. You guys were all going through the grind. But Dougie was not a big guy to begin with, and he would look at times just emaciated. Like, there was not another pound on that body that he could possibly lose.
Yeah, no, he was getting pastier and pastier as the playoffs. And you look back now and you look back at the pictures and really, but Dougie, like, come that series, like, I never played, like, everybody remembers that I was, it was Dougie and I playing together. Well, we really didn't play together ever until the playoffs. Cause you had the Peter Zezel, Ozzy and Bergie line as a checking line. And you had, in that year, you had Dave Anderchuk and Borsheski and Dougie as your first line. And then it might have been Eastwood, myself, and Rob Pearson or Foligno or John Collinwood's a centerman. So I kind of was with would form the third line. And come playoff time, what happened was Dougie ended up double shifting. He'd play first and third. So Dougie would play with Borsheski and Anderchuk in the first line. And then he'd come down and he'd roll with myself and Robbie Pearson or myself and Foligno or myself and Glenn Anderson. And so Dougie played two lines for all the playoffs. So he was playing 24 minutes with the playoffs. So he was going hard. And I remember in the first series, and that was probably the first time I seen the IV drips to help rehydrate. Where Dougie was doing that just to stay hydrated. And I think it was Dave Ellett and I were sitting beside him in the training room and asking him how his rehydration was going because he was on the IV drip to try to get healthy. And Dave and I had the slice of pizza and one of those light drinks that we always had in the dressing room after. He says, our rehydration tastes a lot better than yours.
Yeah. Carbing up. I like that with a little pizza. I can only imagine the look on a trainer's or a medical person's face if a guy was crushing a slice of pizza in this day and age, in the middle of the regular season, let alone in the middle of a big time playoff series. Amazing how things have changed.
Yeah, no, it's really how the, you know, and we practiced more. Guys played and today they practiced less. It's all about conserving the energy and saving it for the game. We're pretty much really old school. If you had a bad game, your next day's practice was an hour and a half. And that was you didn't even take into account, well, you know, the good team, and there's, you know, you have a good team in the league and a bad team in the league. Both teams are going to try the same way. They both try hard. But one team's better than the other. We're on the losing team. The coach always was guilted into making sure, well, we might have lost, but we're not going to get outworked. So he made sure he worked you in practice. And really, you'd be worse the next day because he left it all on the ice in practice. And so the thinking is way better now than it was back then.
With Wendell Clark, this is going to be a weird question perhaps for you. Do you ever find yourself going down your own rabbit hole on YouTube? If an old school game that you were involved in is on TV, and there have been far more of them, Wendell, now than there have been at any point, just because sports networks are looking for content without actual current sports taking place, do you sit down and watch? Like, have you watched Game 7 against Detroit? Have you watched Game 7 against St. Mm-hmm. Louis or even LA at any point over the last 25 plus years?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't watched any of it.
Okay.
You may watch highlights when things come across you, glimpses and pieces of stuff, but I don't ever sit down and watch the game. It's funny, when we used to do the old games with Bonesy with Leaf TV, and you wouldn't even remember. So we'd be doing playoff games that back then. We'd be doing playoff games that we did in the '80s, and they'd say, okay, we're going to do this game against Detroit in 86. And we wouldn't even, I guess I can't remember anything about the game. So we'd get the tape and we'd watch the parts of the game. And it's amazing. But as soon as you started watching the game, the whole game came back to you in your mind. You remembered the whole game again. But if you were just to ask me about it without seeing parts of the game on video, I would have never remembered the game.
Do your kids, or have your kids ever come to you, or friends of your kids come to you and said, hey, I saw this fight of yours on YouTube the other night, tell me about it? Or is it just kind of understood, look, I get it, it's all out there, but you watch what you want and keep it yourself?
Yeah, no, the kids when they were younger didn't see as much, but once they all got older, they all and then they started asking more questions and stuff because they watch all the stuff on YouTube. So my son would have been, they've been all part of watching all that stuff. And then as they got older into teenage years, they started asking questions about that, because the game they were watching in the NHL growing up, there was none of that stuff going on. And then this was all kind of going on, like what was a 5-game suspension now, back then might have been a 2-minute penalty. And so they're going, they were thinking, you know, there was just different rules and the game wasn't as fast and things like that. So it's just how the game has evolved.
Well, that's the biggest thing that jumps out at me is, I think in that Calgary-Vancouver game that was just on, it was, I mean, each shift you could have called 3 or 4 penalties. Some guys had, you know, breakaways and they were getting hauled down. I don't mean just a little hook or tug. It was like feet right from underneath them. And you just realized how much tougher the games were back then compared to today.
Yeah, you had to skate through everything then. There was, like you say, I had a lot of man-on-man if you played wing. As long as I had my defenseman up the ice, or if you're a third guy back, you were skiing beside the guy. There wasn't any back pressure. And so you just picked up your guy and you're with him, and you basically pitchforked it right through his gut. You're riding with him all the way back. And it might have been it was harder to play through. Defensively, actually, probably wasn't as good, where now you have your stick on the ice and passing lanes. It's actually harder now. It was better then to score goals than it is today, because now everybody's making sure your feet are in the right position, your stick's in the right position. It's actually harder to make plays today, especially with the speed of the game. And back then, everybody just picked their guy up and physically took him out of the play, where today that's not allowed. So it's, in a way, it's made the game better in that all sizes of players can play the game today. It's Today, it's whether can you skate and can you think, the two biggest things. And you got to be brave enough to go to the areas in every era. That's the same. But if you can skate and think, you can play the game. It doesn't matter size. Where back then, a big, strong guy could take a little guy out of the play, and there's nothing he could do about it because it wasn't a penalty. Especially in the playoffs, it wasn't a penalty.
Looking back on it, Wendell, because you were still rolling through the mid to late 90s in your playing career, and you've touched on some things. I think you're talking early 90s here, but was one of the worst things in hindsight to happen to the NHL the fact that the New Jersey Devils won the Cup in 95 playing the style that they did, and the fact that they rolled the Red Wings unexpectedly in the Cup final, swept them that year, the left wing lock, the neutral zone trap? Was that a demarcation point, or was the game always kind of played that way and it just, for lack of a better word, got talked about more, celebrated more, that style of play?
Well, the game in the 90s, the game started getting covered more, it's in 92, 93 when the sports, was 24/7 on the radio and TV and stuff. So, but in the 80s, you go in the 70s, Montreal Canadiens played the trap since the 70s. They were the first team to do all that stuff. And nobody thought anything of it. They were just better than everybody else, but they were the first team that was really coached. Here's how we forecheck as a team. Here's the neutral zone as a team, and here's the defensive, and that's the way you have to play. Where all the other teams in the league were not that stringent on how you were to play the game, and so there was always lots of mistakes, and Montreal was doing it forever. And then, but they did the, there's different versions of the trap. If when I played in Quebec, the trap was you force a guy at the red line and he either had to dump it for an icing or he caught the puck up. Where if you were an offensive team, you did the trap inside the blue line, the offensive end, because you wanted to keep the puck in the end zone. And so it wasn't called the trap then, but it really was. You just did it in a different zone. And so the game was really started that way, probably in the 70s with Montreal. And then in the 90s, because New Jersey did it so well with a great set of defense, and then Brodeur, who could handle the puck better than their defenseman could. Other than Niedermeyer and a couple of guys, he was a better passer than the rest of their defensemen. So they just held the line and held everybody up. Because I remember that, I think that last playoff series, I think we only had like 5-6 shots, 7 shots on net that whole series when we lost in 99-2000 to Jersey.
With Wendell Clark on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Certainly won't ask your opinion on when you think hockey's coming back. None of us know the answer to that question. But given your experience having played, Wendell, and the fact that you're around the Maple Leafs a lot as one of the prime alumnus of the team, the fact that you are following your son in his trajectory in professional hockey, so you would be quite familiar with how players are training today. Do you have an opinion? Do you have a sense of what it will take for players to appropriately be ready whenever it is the league gets back up and running? Are we talking days? Do you think we're talking weeks of like a mini training camp type thing? What do you think a player would need to get ready to play and compete in the playoffs should the National Hockey League be able to get back in some form this season?
I don't think it takes any time at all. The players are in way better shape on a continuous basis, but even the shape of the players doesn't really matter. Everybody makes this a big deal about where everybody's at and can you play, and it really doesn't matter because every team and every player is at the same stage. If they say we're playing in 2 days, every team's under the same format. So the hockey might not be very good because nobody's played, but everybody's equal. Nobody's not equal. So you can start at whatever stage you want to start at. That it really doesn't matter. I don't think the injuries would change. I don't think anything would change. Because the players are kept, they keep themselves in much better shape on a year-round basis. And everybody's at an equal stage. It'd be different if one team was training together the whole time that this was going on and the other 29 teams weren't doing anything. That's different. But every player is under the same situation. So I think whenever we can get back to normal, it's just status and go as quick as possible. I think more now than ever, because it is a partnership. It's 50-50. The players and the league want this to go just as the business end and the revenue end goes.